Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
MDCT youth leaders are seriously injured and left hospitalized after an alleged brutal attack by ZANU-PF supporters in Bare.
They were severely beaten by thugs who were wielding weapons. And they were using iron bars, sticks, and all sorts of other weapons. Rhino Masai actually has four of his teeth, upper teeth, have been knocked off.
The civil society organizations threatened to take the government to court for delaying to set up the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission.
I think it all comes back to the issue of political will. There are processes that do not require resources. The government has to show that it is committed to the process of national healing.
And some Zimbabweans are tipping First Lady Grace Mugabe to take over the reins from her husband, barely a year after officially entering politics.
She's not closing in on the throne, she is the throne.
These stories and much more coming up, stay tuned.
Three Changirai MDC Harare Province youth leaders were today allegedly assaulted by a group of ZANU-PF supporters in Bare. One of the youth leaders suffered a broken rib and lost four teeth. The three, according to party spokesman Obet Gutu, sustained serious injuries that needed urgent medical attention.
This afternoon at around lunch hour, three of our youths, Rhino Masaya, who is the Harare Province Organizing Secretary, and Paul Gorekore, the Harare Province Youth Chairperson, as well as Charumbira, who is in the National Executive on behalf of the Youth Assembly. They were set upon by a group of ZANU-PF thugs as they were enjoying their lunch at Paul Gorekore's house in Mbare. They were severely beaten by thugs who were wielding weapons. They were using iron bars and sticks and all sorts of other weapons. Rhino Masai actually has four of his teeth, upper teeth, knocked off, and he's got one rib broken, so we hear. And all the three of them are so badly hurt, particularly Rhino Masai. They are, as I'm talking to you now, admitted at a private hospital in Harare.
What was the reason for this violence? Did the ZANU-PF youth say anything to the youth as to why they were attacking them, or was there any altercation between the two groups?
The violence was completely unprovoked. They were actually enjoying their lunch. They were having their lunch at Gorekore's house in Mbare. So as they were enjoying their lunch, as they were having lunch, from nowhere, a group of ZANU-PF youths set upon them and started to beat them up so severely. This happened at a private residence, at Gorekore's residence in Mbare. And there was absolutely no provocation. They were actually set upon unexpectedly, and we are all in a state of shock, because what it means now is everyone now is in danger. We don't know what is really happening. This is a complete breakdown of law and order. It shows that the ZANU-PF, they have let loose their machinery of violence, and what we want to do now is really to call upon ZANU-PF as a political party and the law enforcement agents, the police, to ensure that these thugs, we suspect they are the same thugs who beat up our supporters in Hopley, in Harare South over the weekend and over the previous weekend, that they should be arrested and that they should be brought to book.
And what's the update about the 17 who were arrested in Harare South at the weekend?
The sad news is that a bail application was made by our team of lawyers on behalf of all the 17 accused persons. Unfortunately, the learned magistrate said that they would want to consider our application for bail. And they say that the ruling on the bail application is going to be handed down tomorrow on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon. So what it effectively means is that all the 17 of them have been remanded in custody.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu speaking with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira from Harare.
Barely a year after she officially entered politics and took over the leadership of the Women's League in ZANU-PF, First Lady Grace Mugabe is arguably now calling the shots in the country, and some in the party and outside are now tipping her to take over the reins from her 91-year-old husband. Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Initially, not many people gave her a chance, thinking she was just the president's beautiful wife. But almost a year after taking over the leadership of the Women's League from Opam Chinguri, First Lady Grace Mugabe has taken the country by storm, and men now believe she is positioning herself for the highest office in the land. Miss Mugabe has brushed aside the perceived enemies in the party by the wayside, among them the former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, former senior party and government ministers Webster Shamu and Tsikamai Mavaire, among others. All those who have dared to criticize or oppose their sentence have been thrown out or suspended from the ruling party. Dr. Amai, as she is now popularly known, after attaining a doctoral degree under controversial circumstances, now has firm control on cabinet ministers and government institutions, though she is not in the government. Political analysts and ordinary people agree that she is now a force to reckon with, and that everything points to a gunning for the highest office if she has her way. Although the First Lady has not yet declared her presidential ambitions, there is widespread belief in the country that she is aiming for the presidency. Harare resident Michael Maweni says clearly the First Lady is now in control. The fact that cabinet ministers follow her as she strides across the country addressing rallies clearly indicates the authority she now commands in both the party and government. Nenyasha Moyo of Shtungwiza is one of those who believe Amai Mugabe is preparing herself for a top leadership position with the support of the so-called Group of 40 or G40 in ZANU-PF, fighting to block the ascendancy of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa in the event that Mr. Mugabe leaves office.
Yeah, I think so, because in as far as I'm concerned, what she's doing is really replicating what she wants to be, and maybe by the time we get to 2018 for the presidential election.
Lawmaker Priscilla Misaira Mbwimshonga of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, formation led by Walsh Mngube, says there is no doubt that Grace Mugabe is fully in charge.
She's not closing in on the throne, she is the throne.
Zimbabwe Democracy Institute Director Pesai Rwanya told a Southern African Political Economy Series meeting discussion on the First Lady recently that she would be powerful for as long as her husband is alive.
Her power is derived from the president as the wife of the president. So she is a force to reckon with insofar as the president endorses or supports what she is doing. Without the support of the president and without using the authority of the president to intimidate the First Lady is not a political force.
He agrees with Mushonga that her entry into politics was a family strategy rather than a party strategy. Rwanya says the First Lady has become so powerful in a short space of time to the extent that her behavior and body language clearly show that she is aiming for the higher office. Grace Mugabe is the first ZANU-PF Secretary for Women Affairs to fly around the country using state resources, and whose meetings are beamed live by the state broadcaster, the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation.
It tells you that she has huge ambition. But what we may not know for now is the level of ambition. Is the ambition to be the head of the state, to be the vice president, or what? We don't know. Because to be the head of the state under ZANU is not a walk in the park.
But political and social commentator Joel Makusha of the Great Zimbabwe University's Philosophy and Religious Studies says the First Lady is justified to move around the country meeting women, youths and other Zimbabweans using state resources. According to Makusha, Miss Mugabe is merely doing her work with the blessings of her party.
There's no way she is actually trying to take over or to succeed. Those are individual permutations. She is just doing the party's work so that the public is aware of her. She is known. She meets people knowing their problems and the like. But that's politics about power. Where she is, there is power.
Mukusha adds her use of state resources could not be possible without the approval of a party and government.
I think what she is doing is in line, it's appropriate, it's approved. There's no way she can fly certain helicopter without the state knowing that there are measures that are taken if you do things that are against the state. So it means it is approved. It's not even by the government. And what she is doing is beneficial to the society. That's my own point of view.
There are many, however, among political analysts and ordinary Zimbabweans who believe that Grace Mugabe may find it difficult to command support in the former Liberation Party in the absence of her husband. According to political commentator Mlondolozi Ndlovu and Ruhanya, Mr. Mugabe has the support of the military and it's not yet clear if the former liberation fighters will support Grace Mugabe as ZANU-PF's presidential candidate. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Civil society organizations which advocate for peace, justice and reconciliation today said they would take the government to the Constitutional Court for deliberately delaying to set up the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission as prescribed by the country's constitution. Patricia Mudadigwa reports from Harare.
Speaking at a press conference organized by the Zimbabwe Center for Community Development, Zimbabwe Civic Education Trust, and You Zimbabwe Trust, the forum's director, Lloyd Kuvea, said the groups intend to approach the Constitutional Court to push the government to establish the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission.
The government has a responsibility to uphold the Constitution as well as to defend the Constitution. And according to us, if that does not happen and the delay has become inordinate, as civil society, we will take the government to the Constitutional Court for non-compliance. Because as provided in Section 324, it says that all constitutional obligations must be performed diligently and without delay.
Director Gladys Tlachkwai of the Zimbabwe Civil Education Trust told Studio 7 that civil society organizations agree that the government's excuse it has no resources is not genuine. She thinks there's no political will within the government and ruling party to establish the commission.
In terms of the excuse around money, I think it all comes back to the issue of political will. There are processes that do not require resources for them to start. For instance, the issue around starting the process of actually bringing the Enabling Act before Parliament and make sure that we do have that Enabling Act even before we appoint the commissioners. So we still, you know, hammer on the point around political will. The government has to show that it is committed to the process of national healing.
Kuvea said the government will no doubt get support for the Peace Commission from the international community, given the importance of the Peace Commission.
When you set up an important body such as the NPRC, and it has happened elsewhere, like with the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the international community will then come in and give funding.
The NPRC is one of the public bodies which were enshrined in the new constitution, which was adopted in 2013. The commission, according to the constitution, is the only body which has a lifespan of 10 years from the effective date of adoption of the 2013 constitution. But it's almost 3 years after the adoption of the new charter, and the commission that is mandated to investigate and bring closure to an era of human rights abuses and violations is yet to be established. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the South African rand continues to significantly weaken against the US dollar. Stand by and hear what economists are saying.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The United Nations Refugee Agency reports that thousands of Malian refugees have fled into Niger in recent weeks despite the end of the conflict in Mali's north.
The war-torn Central African Republic has set December 27th as the new date for presidential and legislative elections.
And a spokesman for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says the president has named a new chief for the country's anti-corruption agency, also known as the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, EFCC. Economists are warning that Zimbabwe's current account deficit will rise significantly owing to the weakening of the South African rand. South Africa is Zimbabwe's biggest trading partner in Harare, which uses a basket of foreign currencies since it ditched its own money in 2009, also uses the rand. The rand has plunged to an all-time low, breaching 14 to the United States dollar on the back of a global drop in commodity prices. Today, the rand was trading at 14.3 to the US dollar. For an in-depth analysis of the impact of the weakening rand on Zimbabwe's economy, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu turned to Chief Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute and a businessman and former president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, Callisto Jokonya. We first asked Chitambara about the effects of a weakened rand.
Well, I think let's get this right first. The rand is a South African currency, which is run by the South African government through their own reserve bank. So in running a currency, every country tries to manage its own economic growth. It also tries to manage its own resources of the nation in general. And so there are always risks in terms of using anyone else's currency, which you are not controlling. And you can either release it in order to attract more investment in your own country or to make yourself competitive, which is what exactly the Chinese have just done recently. And so for the South Africans, they're adjusting their currents as and when they see the need to develop their own economy or expand the cake, as it were, or attract new investment into their country. Now, for us who are using a basket of currencies from other countries, we have always been sitting with that risk. And now it's beginning to affect us. So the rand, the fall of the rand, as of now, it is affecting the Zimbabwean economy in the sense that we can't plan for it, but we only just become a recipient of that currency. And that's really the problem with the rand. So you would see that it's being rejected in the market. Why? Because it's losing value every minute. But of course, we don't have an alternative. We keep holding a U.S. dollar, but that also U.S. dollar, we do not have control over it as well.
Mr. Chitambara, your reaction to that?
South Africa is Zimbabwe's biggest trading partner. So development in South Africa has a domino effect. They have a bearing on macroeconomic development in Zimbabwe. Of course, we may not want to go into the details on why the rand is depreciating against the U.S. dollar. It's to do with macroeconomic fundamentals. But it has actually had a deleterious impact on Zimbabwe's exports, on Zimbabwe's current account sustainability, on Zimbabwe's trade account sustainability. And I think it has actually meant that imports from South Africa are cheaper, whilst our exports to South Africa are more expensive. So I think we witnessed an erosion of current accounts sustainability, and obviously that also affects the external imbalances vis-a-vis the issue of the external debt, because once you continue to run a current account deficit, the implication is obviously that it has to be financed from somewhere, and we have no access to seniorage. So I think it's money that has to be borrowed from somewhere. So it's something that does not augur well for the macro economy in Zimbabwe going forward.
So, Mr. Jokonya, what is the way forward for Zimbabwe?
To me, it's just that we as Zimbabweans need to put our own plans into place. We need to plan 40, 50 years, 100 years ahead and begin to develop a sound economy which is compatible to Zimbabweans themselves and not rely so much with what others are doing outside our own control area.
How soon do you want to see the Zimbabwe dollar, Mr. Jokonya, before I go to Mr. Chitambara?
Listen, I don't think the word is Zimbabwe dollar is the issue. But yes, how soon do we want to have our own currency? I think we must do it. The key thing that we should have done is we should have developed enough resources to safeguard our currency once we put it in the market. In other words, we must have put enough gold reserves, including platinum, whatever it is, or diamonds, so that we can back our currency. That I don't think we have.
Mr. Chitambara, your take, is it time to bring back the Zimbabwe dollar? What is the way forward?
It's still premature to bring back the Zim dollar. I think the way forward here is to deal with the binding constraints. I think the major binding constraint that is prevailing in Zimbabwe right now is the high cost of doing business.
That was Chief Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. You also heard the views of businessman and former president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, Callisto Jokonya.
The army has taken over the disposal of carcasses of elephants and other animals and birds that died of cyanide poisoning in the Wange National Park. This according to Johnny Rodriguez, the chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. Rodriguez says information at hand indicates that the army is leading in the burning of carcasses, but the process of cleaning up and detoxifying polluted drinking wells and rivers has not yet started. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from the Department of National Parks and Wildlife Management. But Rodriguez tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri the army has sealed off the park to locals and is only allowing tourists in.
I do believe the army has been moved in and the army are actually in charge of the anti-poaching and the cleaning up with the national parks. We haven't got any more details, but we will get details further on in the week.
Have they sealed off the national park?
Well, the thing is, there's so many military people up there that I do believe that it's closed up, not to tourists, but to all the other suspicious people are all not allowed to go to the parks. I do believe they're actually trying to get to the top of the problem.
How are they getting rid of the carcasses?
Well, normally they burn them, but the thing is, you know, just by burning it, the actual fluids from the body, which is contaminated into the soil, that has to be neutralized. Otherwise, it will resurface again later on when the first rains come in.
Do you think that they are well-equipped to detoxify the national park?
I'm not too sure. I don't think so. But anyway, this is why they burnt the bodies. Well, it is a good thing to burn it. But then, you know, the area where the animals died and the actual water holes, they have to be neutralized. Otherwise, you know, the cyanide goes down into the soil and eventually it does rise up again.
That was Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force Chairman Johnny Rodriguez in Harare.
Zimbabwe's youth are in limbo as the country's economy continues to nosedive with very little, if any, jobs being created. Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Nkosilati Emmanuel Moyo of the Zimbabwe Organization for the Youth in Politics, who says the future looks bleak for the youth.
There's no way we can revive or resuscitate our economy without foreign direct investment. ZANU-PF's ill policies, which scares away investors, which means our economy will remain dead and becoming even more dead. So as young people, I don't know where we're heading to, but what I can say is our future is bleak. Why we're heading toward bottomless pit. So I don't know exactly what we must do, but I think there's no future, especially with this type of government. We are bound to suffer and suffer more.
The next logical question would be, Mr. Moyo, if there are any solutions in the future, do you see as an organization representing young people in politics that there is a sort of solution to deal with this issue?
The only solution to the Zimbabwe question, I'm sorry, but that is the truth, and I really believe that everyone who is listening wants to hear the truth. The only solution to the Zimbabwe question is regime change. The ZANU-PF government has failed. They've been in power for 35 years. and that they've done nothing good other than killing and destroying the economy of our country. So we may turn north, west, east, south, but the solution is right here with us. The only solution, the Zimbabwean question, is regime change. As long as we remain with this government, we are bound to suffer, and our economy has no chance of recovery.
That was Nkosilati Emmanuel Moyo of the Zimbabwe Organization for the Youth in Politics on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
And in sports news, cricket fans are calling on national team players to improve their game as they prepare for their third one-day international against Bangladesh in Dakar tomorrow. Zimbabwe cricket team has disappointed fans after losing two matches in the series. Yesterday, Zimbabwe lost by 58 runs. Some critics are blaming Zimbabwe's current lack of form on poor management by Zimbabwe cricket. We spoke with cricket commentator Dean Du Plessis earlier on.
It's obviously an extremely worrying situation from a Zimbabwe point of view. Let's not forget that they've just come off of a series lost to Afghanistan, who are ranked way below Zimbabwe, and Bangladesh, who at one stage used to be ranked below Zimbabwe. But there's obviously now a very, very big difference between the two teams. Bangladesh have now become a very good team, while Zimbabwe's cricket seems to not only be stagnating, but going backwards. So it's a very big worry. And where the problem exactly lies, nobody really seems to know. Does it lie with the administrators in Zimbabwe cricket? We've had a new board appointed, a new chairman, but it may not necessarily be Zimbabwe cricket's fault. It may just very well be that the players have lost interest and have forgotten the culture and what it is like to win, and so therefore are now playing very poor cricket, which is totally unacceptable. So where the problem is, nobody actually really seems to know at the moment, but it's a very worrying and disturbing situation. If you're a Zimbabwe cricket fan and if you see your team being comprehensively beaten, comprehensively outplayed in all assets by teams.
So what's the way forward from your point of view? If you were given a chance to advise the cricket coach, what would you tell him?
What I'd first of all do is I would want to have a chat with some of the players, a one-on-one chat. I'd first of all chat one-on-one with the players, not a team chat. Then after a one-on-one chat, I would then have a team talk, and then I would obviously talk to the coach and see exactly where it is that Zimbabwe are going wrong. I personally feel, and I was never very happy with the appointment of Jack Watmore's coach. He was a very successful coach, but that was way back in 1996. And like a player, a coach too has a shelf life.
That was cricket commentator Dean Du Plessis speaking with us from Harare. That there is Mukoma Wakaoma from Ja Pressure.
And remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host on The Connection will lead discussions about the youth and the economy.
To join the discussion, text us on 001-202-465-0318 and we'll call you right back.
And now to recap today's top stories.
MDC youth leaders are seriously injured and left hospitalized after an alleged brutal attack by ZANU-PF supporters in Bare.
The civil society organizations threatened to take the government to court for delaying to set up the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission.
And some Zimbabweans are tipping First Lady Grace Mugabe to take over the reins from her husband barely a year after officially entering politics.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.